chapter 25 entitled Krishna Lifts Govardhan Hill. And I've been assigned to read texts 2 through 5. We'll do the last verse together, but we can read the first verses together also. Ganam samvartakam nama meganam chandakarinam indra pachodayat krudo vakyam chane shamanita. Angry Indra sent forth the clouds of universal destruction, known as Samvartaka. Imagining himself the supreme controller, he spoke as follows. Purport. The word Ishamani here is very significant. Indra arrogantly considered himself to be the Lord, and thus he exhibited the typical attitude of a conditioned soul. Many thinkers in the 20th century have noted the exaggerated sense of individual prestige characteristic of our culture. Indeed, writers have even coined the phrase, quote, the me generation. Everyone in this world is more or less guilty of the syndrome called Isha Mana, or proudly considering oneself the Lord. Text 3. Aho Shri Madhara Mahatmyam Gopanam kanano kasham krishnam martyam upashritya ye chakrur deva helanam. Indra said, just see how these coward men living in the forest have become so greatly intoxicated by their prosperity. They have surrendered to an ordinary human being, Krishna, and thus they have offended the gods. Purport. Of course, Indra was really saying that the cowherd man had offended him, Indra, by taking shelter of Krishna, whom Indra considered to be Martya, a mortal. This was certainly a gross miscalculation on Indra's part. Text 4. Yatadritai karma mayai kratubir namano nibai vidyam avik Shikim Kitva Titir Shanti Bhavarnavam. Their translation, their taking shelter of Krishna is just like the foolish attempt of men who abandon transcendental knowledge of the self and instead try to cross over the great ocean of material existence in the false boats of fruitive ritual sacrifices. Text 5. So this one will chant together. Vachalam Bali Sham Shabdam. Please chant. Agnam Pandita Maninam. Krishnam Martyam Upashritya. Gopame Chakra Apriyam. Vachalam balisham shatstabdam agnam pandita maninam krishnam martyam upashritya gopame chakra apriyam. Please chant. Thank you. Ladies. Vachalam, over talkative. Balisham, child. Stabdam, arrogant. Agnam, foolish. Pandita Maninam, thinking himself wise. Krishnam, Krishna. Martyam, a human being. Upashritya, taking shelter of. Gopa, the cowherds. May, against me. Chakru, have acted. Apriyam, unfavorably. Translation. These coward men have acted inimically toward me by taking shelter of this ordinary human being, Krishna, who thinks himself very wise, but who is simply a foolish, arrogant, over-talkative child. Purport. According to Srila Sridhar Swami, through the insults of Indra, Goddess Saraswati is actually praising Krishna. The Acharya explains, Balisham means free from pretension, just like a child. Stabdam means that he bows down to no one because there is no one for him to offer homage to. Agnam means that there is nothing more for him to know because he is omniscient. Pandita Maninam means that he is highly honored by the knowers of the Vedic, of the Absolute Truth. And Krishnam means he is the Supreme Absolute Truth, whose transcendental form is full of eternity and ecstasy. Martyam means that although he is the Absolute Truth, he nevertheless appears in this world as a human being out of affection for his devotees. Indra wanted to rebuke Krishna as Vachalam because the Lord had presented many audacious arguments in the line of Karma Mimamsa and Shankya philosophy, even though he did not accept these arguments. Thus, Indra called the Lord Balisham, foolish. Indra called him Stabda because he had spoken boldly, even in the presence of his own father. Thus, although Indra attempted to criticize Sri Krishna, the Lord's transcendental character is in fact impeccable. And this chapter will demonstrate how Indra came to recognize the position of the Lord. So I'll read the translations again. Angry Indra sent forth the clouds of universal destruction, known as Samvartaka. Imagining himself the supreme controller, he spoke as follows. Indra said, just see how these coward men living in the forest have become so greatly intoxicated by their prosperity. They have surrendered to an ordinary human being, Krishna, and thus they have offended the gods. They're taking shelter of Krishna is just like the foolish attempt of men who abandon transcendental knowledge of the self and instead try to cross over the great ocean of material existence in the false boats of fruit of ritual sacrifices. These coward men have acted inimically toward me by taking shelter of this ordinary human being, Krishna, who thinks himself very wise, but who is simply a foolish, arrogant, over-talkative child. So I just came back from a brief trip to New York City, and as I was on the subway, one of the subways I took to get from my son's apartment to the airport, as I stepped into the subway, this man welcomed me, and I saw that he had a push thing that said love all over it. And he was doing his form of Sankirtan in the subway, and he started preaching some of the very thoughts that I was having. It was because I was thinking about how as soon as I came back, I'm giving class, and he started talking about sound vibration and how important sound is and how we should use our breath to glorify the Lord. Of course, he didn't have the process of Krishna consciousness to preach to people, but he definitely had people's attention on the subway, and his message was actually right on. I mean, he was talking about love of God. Ultimately, he was trying to sell some CDs with some music, but anyway. But in looking at these verses, there's just so many points. I don't know why I was given so many verses, but to start off with, this Samvartaka cloud is described as the clouds of universal destruction. So although Indra in these verses is accusing the coward men of being intoxicated, in reality, he himself is acting like an intoxicated person. He's really just starting off with this action of ordering a cloud of devastation. I mean, this is the cloud that is used to destroy the universe. And that's going a little overboard considering, what he was trying to achieve, but just trying to punish Krishna and the residents of Vrindavan for not worshiping him. So in the purport, our godbrothers are pointing out how the word Ishamani is significant and how we all have this propensity in us to be self-centered. And I know myself, I'm more and more aware how that is in fact my modus operandi. But the interesting thing is that that Indra, it's like he's totally exposed in everything he's saying. Whatever, he's the one that's upset that all the attention is not given to him. And so in the second verse that we read, he's accusing Krishna of being an ordinary human being. So, and then he repeats it in the following verse. So this is a definite problem for Lord Indra, to see Krishna as an ordinary human being. And, overall, to me, these verses, the message is that we must glorify the Lord. And there's so many verses throughout the scriptures, we're constantly hearing this instruction to glorify the Lord. For instance, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Satatam kirtayantamam yatatas cha jyada vataha namas yantas chamam bhaktya nitya yukta upasate. Always chanting my glories, endeavoring with great determination, bowing down before me, these great souls perpetually worship me with devotion. So the glorification of the Lord is really the essence of our practice. It's what the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra is all about. We're trying to use every breath to glorify the Lord. Well, we understand that, as pure devotees, when we become pure devotees, that this will be our way of life. But until then, until we're actually pure, we have so many other conversations amongst ourselves in order to do service, in order to do whatever we do in our lives to support our families or raise our children or jobs that we have, so on and so forth. We have conversations, but not always directly glorifying the Lord. At the same time, the point that I'm getting from these verses is that we must be very careful in what we speak. Like every word, we're responsible for what comes out of our mouth. Every word is important. If we're constantly criticizing other people or criticizing our situation, then guess what we get to hear? Then all we're hearing is criticism. So if we want to hear nice things, and then we have to also generate that, and you know, be the one who's saying nice things. In other words, I know we can't be false and pretend we're something we're not, but we can practice being aware of what's coming out of our mouth, what we are actually saying, because we are responsible for the, you know, how we create our world is coming from us. So back to the verses that Lord Indra is calling Krishna foolish, arrogant, over-talkative. Besides, he's calling him an ordinary human being, and he thinks himself very wise. So Sridhar Swami, one of our previous acharyas, he has explained how each one of these words can be taken in two different ways. Can be taken as the verse is translated, or because Mother Saraswati is so kind that she will only let Krishna be glorified. And so each of these seemingly derogatory terms has another meaning. And in the purport, it's explained that Balisham means free from pretension, just like a child. Or as Indra was putting it, like you're a child, like that, as if it's a put down. He's just immature child. But the other way of understanding it is the innocence of a child, free from pretension. You know, children can't really. They can play act, but they're too simple to come up with, you know, the complex negative things that adults come up with. And stubdom is translated in the verse as arrogant, but Mother Saraswati has transformed that to mean he who bows down to no one because there is no one for him to offer homage to. In other words, he is truly great. There is just no one greater than God. Even we know that when we're preaching, people sometimes misunderstand God in so many different ways. I happened to meet someone this weekend at an event I attended in New York where a man was telling me how he had followed the Vedas for 20 years and now he's a Buddhist. I don't quite understand why he gave it up, but he was telling me, if there's many gods. There's many gods in Hinduism. And I'm like, no. I mean, there are demigods, but there's only one Supreme Lord. And you find that that's true with pretty much any religion that's existing on this planet, that ultimately there is one Supreme Lord, and that Supreme Lord is Krishna. So when you're the Supreme, as Krishna is, then there is no one that he needs to bow down to. So that's the other meaning, the other side of arrogant. Because typically in America, in the West, in the material world, it's not very good to be arrogant. Arrogant means, well, we use the term puffed up, right? That's the ISKCON lingo, puffed. Somebody's puffed up. They think too highly of themselves, and that's not a good qualification. So that's what Indra is accusing Krishna of being, arrogant. Like, he thinks too highly of himself. But the point is that he is the Supreme Lord. And Indra is just blind to that at this moment. So Agnam means that there's nothing more for him to know because he is omniscient. But what Indra was trying to say is he's foolish. And Pandita Maninam means that he's highly honored by the knowers of the absolute truth. But Indra is saying he thinks himself wise. So the implication is he isn't wise. So fortunately for Lord Indra, he had Mother Saraswati transform the meaning of these words. We're usually not that fortunate. If we say something insulting to someone else, it's not going to land very well on the other side, and it could come back to haunt us. So the lesson is, you know, to be careful and not, you know, really just, if we can avoid being critical, that's the best. There's really not much need for it. Even if we're training people, there's always a way to say things nicely. There's other times in the scriptures where this same situation happened. And in fact, in Anti Leela, Chaitanya Charitamrita Anti Leela, this very verse is quoted. The story at that time in the Anti Leela is that there was a brahmana who had composed some verses, and he read them to Swarup Damodar for approval before being able to quote it to Lord Chaitanya. And the verse had a tinge of impersonalism in it. Now all the people, it wasn't just Swarup Damodar, there was a group of people, and when everyone heard the verse, they commended the poet, but Swarup Damodar caught it, and he asked this poet to explain the verse, and in his explanation, then Swarup Damodar was able to see, point out to him what his misunderstanding was. It basically was, he was saying that Lord Chaitanya was the owner of Lord Jagannath's body, but the understanding is that Lord Jagannath is Krishna 100%. There is no material body here. He's 100% Krishna. So so then in the story, it's explained that Saraswati did the same thing that we're reading in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that Saraswati was able to change his words and make it into a prayer. So then Swarup Damodar says, sometimes demons, even Lord Indra, the king of heaven, chastise Krishna, but Mother Saraswati, taking advantage of the words, offered prayers to the Lord. And then this verse that we're studying today was quoted. And then he goes on saying, Indra, the king of heaven, being too proud of his heavenly opulences, became like a madman. Thus bereft of his intelligence, he could not restrain himself from speaking nonsensically about Krishna. Thus Indra thought, I have properly chastised Krishna and defamed him. But Saraswati, the goddess of learning, took this opportunity to offer prayers to Krishna. The word vachala is used to refer to a person who can speak according to Vedic authority, and the word balisha means innocent. Krishna spoke the Vedic knowledge, yet he always presents himself as a prideless, innocent boy. When there is no one else to receive obeisances, one may be called Anamra, or one who offers obeisances to no one. This is the meaning of the word shtabda. And because no one is found to be more learned than Krishna, he may be called Agna, because that indicating that nothing is unknown to him. The word panditamani can be used to indicate that Krishna is honored even by learned scholars. Nevertheless, because of affection for his devotees, Krishna appears like an ordinary human being and may therefore be called martya. So here's another nice explanation of each of these words. And then in this section of Auntie Leela, he goes on and quotes another time when the demon Jarasandha chastised Krishna, saying, "You are the lowest of human beings. I shall not fight with you, for you killed your own relatives." And then in this case also, Mother Saraswati takes the word Purushadama to mean Purushatama, he to whom all men are subordinate. And another word, nescience or maya, may be called bandhu because she entangles everyone in the material world. Therefore, by using the word bandhuhan, Mother Saraswati says that Lord Krishna is the vanquisher of maya. So Shishupala blasphemed Krishna, but the goddess of learning, Saraswati, offered her prayers to Krishna, even by his words. So, unless we have Saraswati right there by our side, changing any nasty words into glorification of Krishna, our best option is to concentrate on glorifying the Lord with every breath and play it safe, right? And of course, besides glorifying Krishna, my understanding of these verses is the next step is to actually worship Krishna. And I know we all are worshiping Krishna. We're sitting here in front of our lordships, Sri Sri Radhe Shyam, Sri Krishna Balaram, Sri Sri Gauri Thai, and the entire disciplic succession. So we are very fortunate to have this opportunity to worship the Lord on a daily basis. Krishna says, "Ananyas chintayantamam yejana parupashite tesham nitya biyuptanam yoga shemam pihamyam." Those who always worship me with exclusive devotion, meditating on my transcendental form, to them I carry what they lack, and I preserve what they have. So if we continue to worship the Lord, if we chant our rounds faithfully every day, our instruction is to chant 16 rounds every day. And I know most of you who I'm seeing here are chanting regularly. I know we have a very large internet audience. And maybe there's some devotees who are not committed to chanting 16 rounds. And I know it's even especially among our youth, what can I say? They maybe don't have the full understanding of this instruction to chant 16 rounds. We vow this at our initiation, but that doesn't mean to say we have to wait for initiation. In fact, that's the practice to get to the point of qualifying to get initiated. I've been to many japa retreats, and I know that the youth have expressed their concern. Everybody loves, especially when the youth, everyone loves kirtan, and they're very enthusiastic to chant Hare Krishna in kirtan. But that personal meditation takes some commitment, and it takes time. But it's important. It's very, very important. The instruction is coming from the top. It's coming from Lord Chaitanya. It's coming from Krishna himself. But it's not just something that our guru made up just to keep us busy. It's not coming because we want to torture the youth. I don't know what people, how they look at it, but it's for our purification. It's our conversation, personal conversation that we're having with the Lord every day. And it's easier than prayer because you don't have to compose it in your mind. You don't have to really think too hard. You just have to hear and chant. Of course, in order to hear, you have to chant. They go hand in hand. But the hearing is considered more important than the chanting. And that's all Srila Prabhupada instructed us, just hear. It's pretty basic. What can I say? I have some very, quite a few nice devotees who, I don't understand why they don't chant 16 rounds, but I don't know if there's any good argument to not chant 16 rounds, because if we just do this one activity, then we can qualify to go back to Godhead. So anyway, to get back to the overall gist of these verses, there's another word that we haven't gone over again, which is vachalam. Well, this is a verse that you're probably familiar with. Mukam karoti vachalam pangu langan yate grim yat kripa tadaham vande paramananda madhavam. That the Supreme Personality of Godhead has the form of Satchitananda Vigraha, transcendental bliss, knowledge, and eternity. I offer my respectful obeisances unto him who turned the dumb into eloquent speakers and enables the lame to cross mountains. Such is the mercy of the Lord. So, Indra is rebuking Krishna as Vachalam, and is translated here as over-talkative. But in this verse from the Madhya Lila that I just quoted, the word is translated an eloquent speaker. So there really is two sides to these words. And it's better to stick to saying words of praise. I know that I'm a very critical person, and typically I'll be saying criticism before glorification. So really, this class is, applies to myself more than anyone, but it is possible to internally say the criticism, not let it come past our lips, and just say out loud the glorification part. I'm not sure if this was a story that somebody said in Bhagavatam class, but I have heard the story, I think it was from Lakshmi Moni actually, a teacher training course, how someone had a class paper that was, they actually didn't write anything. They didn't take the test. They basically handed in a blank paper when they were supposed to hand in the answers to the questions or essays or whatever it was. And so the teacher, when handed back the papers, gave that student something like 14%. And he was astonished, like, how did I get anything? Like, there should have been a zero. They said, well, the paper was clean and neat. So there's always something, that we can find. That, you didn't say that? Okay, thank you. It wasn't from Lakshmi. I don't know where I got that story from then. But there's always two sides to the coin. You can always see the good or not. It's up to us to choose. We have the choice at every minute. And that's all that I have to say today. And I'm sure there's so much more if somebody wanted to add to this class, or questions or comments. Yes, Madam Hansel.
I once heard this saying, and it stuck with me. He says that you're not known by what others say about you. You're known by what you say about others. So with Indra here, it's not what everybody said about him, it's what he said about Krishna. And then one observation that I've had was that when you like someone, you see one quality. And if you're angry or you're don't like them, you see another quality. Like if you like someone, you say they're very determined. But that same quality of determination, if you don't like them or you're angry with them, you say they're very stubborn. And then, so I made a whole list of how you, and also Rina Ananda Maharaj one time pointed out that in the mode of goodness, your friends, and the mode of passion, your competitors, and in the mode of ignorance, your enemies. So depending on which mode is affecting you at the time, you relate differently.
Thank you.
How
do you do?
There's a story about a devotee that came, a disciple, that came to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, and he had many grievances. He was very critical. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said to him, "Why are you being critical?" So that's my job. I'm a guru. I'm supposed to be critical. But you don't have to be critical. That's not your job. You're a disciple.
Yeah.
So I just thought that was a very interesting way to look at it.
Yeah, thank you. Lakshmi,
you? I'm just thinking this is a typical example of that progression that's described in the Bhagavad Gita, that by contemplation of the objects of the senses, one develops attachment, and from attachment, anger, and from anger, you know, one loses his intelligence. And that's why even in the material world, people say when you're angry, count to 10, because what comes out of your mouth in anger, usually you regret it afterwards. That's why vacha vegam, manasa krodha vegam, manasa krodha vegam, pushed by anger, that when you're pushed by anger, you go somewhere where you don't want to go. So we should be very meticulous that we're not when we're in that mode, when we're affected by that mode, that we keep our mouth shut, because it passes so quickly, and then we look back on what we said, and now we have the benefit of being able to press send, so we could, you know, we could say it and distribute it to millions of people in one button, and you know, destroy many relationships at once instead of just one. So we have to be very, very careful, because, you know, in this age of Kali, anger is one of the qualities, the quality of being quick to quarrel and quick to anger. And so, and then we have that trigger, you know, that internet trigger or the iPad trigger or the whatever trigger that allows us to multiply the negative effect of our anger. And when our mind is, when our intelligence is turned off, then we do stupid things. Yeah. Look what happened.
Yeah, thank you. Yes, sir.
We're seeing how Saraswati changes the meanings of different things, you know, in the glorification of Krishna. Yeah. I was thinking that sometimes amongst devotees, there are misunderstandings. In other words, sometimes a devotee is expressing something and the other devotee may see it differently or take a different meaning. So my question is that Mother Saraswati there, like doing her thing of, you know, making the other person understand something different for a higher purpose? You understand my question?
I understand your question, but I don't know Mother Saraswati, so you tell us. What do you think?
That's my question, not yours.
I don't know the answer.
You're supposed to answer my question.
Well, I don't know. We could, you know, I could imagine it's Mother Saraswati, but I don't know.
Or who is doing it, or why? Or why does that happen?
Well, maybe it is Mother Saraswati who's made up all the words that we use, so she has made, you know, a flip side of the words. Okay, Sachin, when are you going to answer the question?
I wouldn't necessarily attribute it to Mother Saraswati. Generally, what I the experience is that there's a hearer and a speaker, and both are filtering what they say and what they hear through their own false ego. So you say something, and then they receive it filtered through their own perception of reality, and it gets distorted in the process. And, you know, there's so many cultural reasons why things are misinterpreted and without understanding other. We live in a very multicultural society, so what works for us may not work for another culture. We've discussed in some of the classes that we've been at that, you know, even physical touch or physical proximity in some countries is just the way it is. And when you come in contact with that, in your experience, it's very disturbing. So, because of the cultural differences. So, I don't know if we can, you know, Saraswati. First of all, Sanskrit language. It's not every language necessarily that she. And it's in relation to Krishna too. So I wouldn't be so quick to attribute it to her.
Okay, thanks. Anything else? That mic, is it?
I'm not a devotee, but I appreciate you not only welcoming me, but allowing me to ask a question. You had talked about chanting japa and how it may not be done correctly. And I was looking back at some of the things that I've been reading, and it specifically says that Srila Prabhupada, though he recommended that 16 rounds a day were chanted, it was ultimately a matter of quality over quantity. And in the Padma Purana, it just simply states, for any person who is chanting the holy name either softly or loudly, the path to liberation and even heavenly happiness are at once open. So my question is, how are others to know what is in one's heart and how they are going about the chanting of the japa as far as a subjective observation by others in the community?
Right, we can't judge other people's japa. We can only be, you know, responsible for our own, right? So for our own japa, there's certain practices to facilitate hearing properly. So in other words, we use our tongue and our lips and our mouth to pronounce properly. So like some of the basics are pronouncing properly, pronouncing every syllable of the Maha Mantra. This is some of the practices we do in a japa workshop. It's amazing how not everybody chants properly. Even after many years, sometimes we're slurring, we're dropping a word. We're thinking we're doing fine. But when we actually slow down and examine, sometimes just the material side of the chanting, there's some improvement that can be there. Then once you get the basics of like chant, just saying the word, saying every syllable in hearing, then there's the mind that is going to take us away some other place, planning our day, thinking of the past, thinking of the future, you know, just looking at, you know, being hungry, being thirsty. You're thinking about all these things when you're chanting japa. And you have to pull the mind back to hear. And this is a whole practice in itself. And the being attentive when chanting is so important, and yet it's actually takes a lot of practice. That's all we're doing is practicing every day, practice. And it's just like if you go to the gym and you work out, and then you say, hey, you know, this is really overrated. I went to the gym, I was there for 2 hours, and where are my muscles? Where's my strength? But you know, someone will say, well, that was just once. You have to keep going. You have to do it regularly. You have to make it a habit. And then after some time, you're going to see the results. So it's the same way with chanting japa. It's like we're practicing. We want to hear. We want to pronounce properly. We want to hear. And then once we've got that somewhat happening, then we can consider like the heart, like chanting from the heart. There was a saying, a mantra in the japa retreat, heart deep, not lip deep. So you have to use your lips to chant. I mean, that has to be there, like the foundation, the mechanics has to be there, and that, you know, controlling the mind and bringing it back. And then there's that heart connection. And that's the most important thing. But at the same time, you know, unless we are chanting properly and, you know, actually being attentive, then that true heart connection isn't there. And that's really the goal. We want to attain Krishna's lotus feet, and we'll know we've reached it because there's so much nectar in the holy name. And unless we're experiencing that, we know we have, you know, that goal to reach. And but we know that the nectar is there, and it's worth going to. But I don't have
a... Just one point. I noticed every time you had mentioned Srila Prabhupada, and you said 16 rounds, I always remember that he had another part of that 16 rounds he would always say.
At least.
Yeah, at least. Because ultimately, like Lord Chaitanya, he says, Sada Hari. He says, you're always chanting. So yeah. It's, why stop?
Right.
That's an interesting question you can ask yourself sometime, that the mind will say, well, now you've finished your 16 rounds, now it's my turn, you know, and the mind comes back again. Why stop?
Actually, I took a course when I was in Mayapur in, you know, earlier this year. It was called the Bhakti Sadachar course, Vaishnav Behavior. And the devotee, he has a very long name, I can't remember his whole name, Sannyasi, who gives the course. He was saying that at least means that when we're initiated, we're actually supposed to chant more than 16 rounds. That the at least indicates more. Or actually, he was looking at it like this. He was saying that a neophyte devotee, beginner devotee, is encouraged to chant at least 16 rounds. But then once we're committed, initiation is a definite, giving vows, we're committed. The guru accepts us, we accept the guru, right? Then he's saying that we should take it to the next step, or we should admit that we're not neophyte anymore, which, I don't know, I identify myself being neophyte, but he was saying that means that we should chant more. So he was saying it means 17 rounds for any initiated devotee. I sort of understood his logic, but I'm not sure if I'm explaining it in such a way that makes sense. But yeah, there's many devotees in this community who chant quite a few extra rounds. If you take it seriously, Prabhupada said at least 16 rounds. But strike the 16. True, Crown Prabhu.
Also, I think a good chanter, then there's changes in behavior and so forth. You know, if you're chanting good rounds, your behavior is better. You know, you're improving in so many ways. See, and that's a way of objectively.
Okay, yeah, Prabhupada said chant to be happy, right?
Yeah.
So if we chant nicely, we should be happy.
Chant.
Okay, well, I think we'll wind it up with chant and be happy. Hare Krishna.